Shalom Aleichem. My name is Rabbi Adam Dubin. This week, our learning is once again for the Refuah Shleima of Zev Ben Leah, Dr. Zev Zelenko, as well as all the other Chalei Yisrael. This week's Parsha, as we know, is the Parsha Vayikra. It's the first Parsha in Sefer Vayikra. And it's interesting that Chazal say that really, what's the first Parsha that children, when they're learning Torah for the first time, should learn is Parshas Vayikra, because the tahor, the pure, the children who don't have any averus on them, should be engrossed in learning about Torah that is tahor. Now, granted, all Torah is tahor and pure, but specifically the content of Parshas Vayikra is about karbanos, which of course. There's a lot of details involved with them, but you need to be in a state of tahara. They help you mechaper averos. There's a lot of different things about the banos, but so that's the reason Chazal say that we should end up teach children from Parshas Vayikra when they begin learning Torah. Also, the Shabbos is an interesting Shabbos because in many communities, at least, this is like sort of like Shabbos HaGadol. Now, next week. Parshas Tzav is actually Parshas Hagadol, Shabbos Hagadol, but due to the fact that next week is Motzei Shabbos, after Shabbos is also Pesach, so there's a lot of different halachas that are involved with when Pesach falls out on Motzei Shabbos. So a lot of the Rabbanim that I'm familiar with are treating this Shabbos as if it's Shabbos Hagadol. And so what that means is, in many cases, they're going to be giving their Shabbos HaGadol Drasha this Shabbos as opposed to what the next Shabbos, and some other minor things. The truth is, however, that there are many different minhagim, different customs when it comes to Shabbos HaGadol altogether with regard to when you read the special Shabbos HaGadol Haftorah, if at all. And again, I say there are different customs because it's not even within, say, the Ashkenazi community, you can find two or three different minhagim. So that goes even more so when you add in the Hasidic communities, the Sephardi communities, etc. So just to be aware of that. So again, in this week's Parsha, we are introduced to the Karbanos. We learn many details about how to bring many different types of karbanos, including those of animals and birds, as well as the menachos, the meal offerings. We learn how to prepare the animals, what to do with their dam, and the different parts of the animal that are offered on the Mizbeach. And these details might seem to be less relevant today than they did about 2,000 years ago, since we haven't been able to bring karbanos since the Churban HaBayis. Nevertheless, there are many important lessons to be learned that are relevant to us even today. So I want to focus on the topic, the specific of chelev, which is a certain kind of forbidden fat of an animal, which are mentioned a number of times in connection with the karbanos. So just to picking the pasuk in, it's actually in, it would be the fourth aliyah. It's a Perek Gimel Pasuk Tes. It says, "V'hikriv mizevach hashlamim isha l'Hashem echibo ha'alya t'mima l'umas ha'atze yisrena v'esa chelev ha'machase esa kerev v'es kol ha'chelev asher al ha'kerev." The Pasuk says, "He shall bring from the shlamim, the peace offering, a fire offering for Hashem, its choicest part, the entire tail, removing where it joins from the kidneys, the layer of fat that covers the innards, and the fat that is on the innards." Rashi has only has two different short comments on the pasuk. I'll just mention them to you. That it says that the chalbo, that the choicest part, it means the choicest part of the animal, and what this refers to the whole fat, fatty tail. And the second comment that Rashi makes is umos ha'atzim, that means removing it to where it joins, connected to the kidneys, that is above the kidneys, which give counsel, etzim, as Rashi says elsewhere. But more lengthy perish on the pasuk comes from the Ramban. The Ramban discusses different kinds of fat that are classified as chelev. The Ramban distinguishes between two different kinds of fat. Two kinds of fats that we are familiar with are chelev and shuman. Chelev fats are kept separate and distinct from the flesh of the animal and are enclosed within their own membrane. These types of fats are asur to eat. In contrast, shuman are fats that are dispersed within the meat. It's mutter to eat them, although probably you shouldn't eat too much of them because they can be high in cholesterol. The Mekubalim teach us that when we consume animals as well as other foods, we absorb their characteristics. So a number of Mefarshim pointed out that kosher animals have character traits that are more appropriate for us to internalize and to emulate. For example, animals and birds of prey that attack and kill their food are not kosher. The animals and birds that are kosher are more gentle and more peaceful. We'll learn more about that in Parsha Shmini, examples of kosher animals and animal traits, etc. Perhaps we can extend this idea to the different categories and types of fat. Chelev fats keep to themselves. They're surrounded by, as I mentioned, their own membrane. They don't mix with the meat of the animal. We can suggest that this represents people who only think about themselves and are not concerned about the community. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Perek Beis Mishnah Hey, Hillel Hazakin teaches us that one should not be porish min tzibur, should not separate himself from the community. And the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Aleph, strongly condemns someone who separates himself from the community, even if he has not specifically transgressed any averas. The Rambam writes that a person who separates himself from the tzibur from the Klal Yisrael and doesn't fulfill any mitzvahs together with them, does not take part in their hardships or join in their communal fast, but rather goes his own individual path as if he is from another nation and doesn't have any chelik, any portion in Olam Haba, in the world to come. Separating from the community is therefore considered a very non-kosher trait, and therefore ingesting chelev is asur. On the other hand, shuman is dispersed throughout the animal's meat. And this could represent people who are involved within the community, take an interest in others, try to be helpful. It's a kosher trait and therefore is mutter to eat shuman. The Ramban also discusses whether the tail fat or sheep is considered to be chelev. One of his arguments is that it's not chelev is that the tail is in constant motion. The Ramban explains that chelev is never formed in a limb that is constantly moving. Only permitted shuman will form in such an appendage. Perhaps we can extrapolate from this that constant motion represents a positive trait that we should strive to emulate. We're put into this world to work hard, to achieve, and to improve the world. In fact, as we know, Chazal, each and every one of them had jobs. They were not just sitting and learning by themselves, which of course is a big part of what they did, but they had day jobs. They did not spend their entire time just secluded by themselves, but they went out into the world. The whole concept of going out into the world, making your hashpa on the world, having an impact, is a very important lesson that each and every one of us should really internalize. Of course, those who have a job, and under the current situation that the world is in, having a job is not always as simple as it used to be, but we should try to always have the positive impact and to work and be a part of the world and not separate from it. So being a part of the world and working to improve it, that requires a constant effort and exertion. At the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, we learn that overcoming many challenges, Yaakov Avinu wanted to break and we want to take a break. And that, now, to say, this does not mean that he wanted to go on a holiday, on a vacation. He wanted time to focus on Torah and his own self-development. However, he was confronted with the challenge of dispute between Yosef and his brothers. Kadosh Baruch Hu rebuked Yaakov for wanting to take it easy. And Hashem said that that he would have plenty of time to rest in Olam Haba. I see Rashi in Parshas Vayeshev. The trait of being constantly active, constantly working on ourselves, striving to improve, is a kosher trait. Later in Sefer Vayikra, we'll see in Parsha Shmini, the Ramban discusses another distinction in types of fat. The flanks of an animal consist of layers of muscle and fat that extend down the sides of the body and surround the abdominal cavity. And by the way, this explanation is taken from a footnote in Ramban's commentary in Parsha Shmini. Just to be aware. So the portion of the fat that's concealed by the layers of flesh is not included in the prohibition of the Torah as chelev to eat. Only the fat that's visible in the flanks when the animal is trabered, is flayed, is forbidden. We can therefore suggest this teaches the importance of tznius, of modesty. Adhering to laws of tznius provides us with many benefits. For example, it helps to ensure that individuals are treated properly rather than as objects. It's an unspoken message that we are an Am Kadosh, a holy people, separate from Western culture. While we might live within it, we are separate from it. Or we try to be at least separate from it, and then they view us that way, whether or not we mean to be. Privacy and Kedusha go hand in hand. Keeping something separate and concealed enhances its holiness. Some of the laws of tznius are requirements, they're obligatory. For example, women covering their elbows and knees and collarbones. Truth is, men also have to follow laws of tznius. Slightly different, but they are required for men as well. Anyway, other tochosnias are really more minhagim and can vary a little bit from community to community. And if you're not sure about a specific garment, you should ask your local Orthodox rabbi. Keeping ourselves covered appropriately is a kosher trait, and therefore the fats that are concealed are permitted. Now, the word chelev is also used as a support for Torah Shebaal Peh and demonstrates its necessity. Remember, the Torah is divided into two different parts. Torah Shebichsav is the written Torah, and Torah Shebaal Peh is the oral Torah. So let's explore what we mean here. There's a famous story in the Gemara Maseches Shabbos, the Daf Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, about a non-Jew who wants to become a ger, but he was only interested in accepting the Torah Shebichsav and not the Torah Shebaal Peh, only the written Torah, not the oral Torah. First, he came to Shammai. Shammai rejected him out of hand, because, of course, the two parts of Torah cannot be separated. And then he came to Hillel, and Hillel agreed to convert him, to teach him only the Torah Shebichsav, only the written Torah. Its first lesson was to start learning the Aleph Beis. However, at his second lesson, Hillel HaZaken reversed the order of the letters and changed their names. And when this Ger complained, Hillel said to him, "You see that you can't even learn the Aleph Beis without relying on the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition. It's impossible to learn Torah without learning Torah Shebichsav without Torah Shebaal Peh. You relied on me to teach you the Aleph Beis. You also need to rely on me to teach you the Torah Shebaal Peh and to accept the interpretations that it contains." We can see another proof for the necessity of the Torah Shebaal Peh in the word chelev, which refers again to certain fats that are aser, mamish aser. The word chelev is spelled ches lamed vez. The Hebrew word for milk is cholov, which is also spelled ches lamed vez. The same exact spelling in the same letters, same word order, same order. They look the same. The only difference between the two words is noticeable when you have the nekudos, the vowels. The problem, of course, is that if you've ever looked in a Sefer Torah, you'll know that there are no vowels in a Sefer Torah. So how do we know that the halachas restricting chalav and meat but permitting chalav on its own refer to milk and not to chalav, the chalav fat? And how do we know that the item that is asr is chalav and not chalav? We only know this from Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebichtav cannot help here because the two words look completely identical. It's important in our lives to try to be connected to the community. As many parts of the world, of the United States, are beginning to open up once again. Shuls are beginning to, again, many have already been open to limited extent, but they're opening up more. In fact, just today, I saw there was new guidance coming out from the OU and the RCA about Pesach coming up and guidance for shuls to reopen based off of the CDC's updated guidelines, allowing more people, questions about masks and necessity because of vaccinations. I'm certainly not getting into all the shakla bataria there, but the world is opening up. And one of the important messages that I read in these guidelines was the importance of reminding people who have not been to shul in a year the importance of coming back. There's a lot you can do learning, you know, whether it's online or over the phone. There's a big difference between doing that and learning b'chavrusa in person, going to a shir in person. Many people have become accustomed to davening outside in the backyard minyan, or even still on their own in their own homes. It's not the same as davening with the community. Certain parts of davening you cannot do if you're by yourself. There's something about coming to shul itself, showing a part of the community, not just going to your backyard. Even if you have other people there and you have a minyan, not the same. So it's important to be involved in the community and keep connected to it in whatever way that you're able to. But again, I saw these guidelines today and I thought I'd make a mention how it's connected to our parsha as well. Remember that we're put into the world to work on ourselves and to keep moving and growing. Rest and relaxation, of course, can be important, help keep us refreshed and energized, but it's not the purpose of our life. Try to be aware of sneas, the clothes that we wear, and choose even not just the styles of clothing, but the colors, to not be flashy. There's a lot of things when it comes to Hilchos Sneas that many people don't even realize, but it's important to try to take a lesson from the chalav and the chalav, the chalav and the shuman, I mean, about modesty and sneas as well. And of course, to remember another lesson, the chalav and chalav, that we learn as part of the Torah, that cannot be used or misled, assuming that we follow the Torah Shebaal Peh along with the Torah Shebichtav. You cannot have the Torah Shebichtav without Torah Shebaal Peh. It's one of the things that separates Torah-observant Jews from other sects at the Karayim that you know, basically fallen away, but that don't follow Torah Shebaal Peh. You know, I think I mentioned some time ago that you can't know what tefillin are without Torah Shebaal Peh. You can't know how to put on tzitzis or to do with them without Torah Shabbat Peh. You can't know the difference between Chalav and Chalav without the Torah Shabbat Peh. Just try to keep all these things in mind. By doing so, by trying to work on your own observance of Torah and mitzvahs, and then, again, going into the community, however possible it is for you at this time, to positively influence others in this way as well. To remind everyone the connection that we've been missing, as well as the connection to the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebaal Peh. By doing all these things, in Yirtzeh Hashem, we should not only find our way completely out of this pandemic, that hopefully the light is visible, but also that we should find our way out of Galus with the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu B'mehirah V'yameinu, as we approach the Zman Chiruseinu of Pesach. I wish everyone a good Shabbos, and Zayke Benchet.